Thank you for very two kind words of introduction. The truth is, it's a tremendous honor and privilege to be a part of everything that's going on here today. This room is hosted for NCSY and for other purposes. So many gatherings of collegiates and of students, but it's a thrill each and every time. It's such a special group of people to be a part of, with such a very sharp focus and mission and sense of purpose for what we're doing. And I hope you join me in experiencing that thrill and really thanking the organizers who put it together. Of course, Rabbi Rakoff and his entire team of Mashpiyim, the entire team of people who are helping the advisors, Ari Zucker and the rest of the people who helped put today together and the conference together. Really a tremendous privilege to be a part of all of it. So I learned a very long time ago, long before I started having aches and pains every time I moved any part of my body and started feeling the effects of advanced and old age, I learned that when you play ball and when you exert yourself, so sometimes the worst thing that you can do if you're feeling a little bit of stress and a little bit of strain is to take a break and to stop. The worst thing that you can do if you're feeling a little bit in your knees or you're feeling a little bit out of shape is to take a seat on the side, because as hard as it is to push on and to keep on going while you're playing ball or while you're doing your workout, your exercise, it's even harder to stop and then to start again. And a similar lesson, once I started having those aches and pains, and once I started having the real impending sense of old age and a little bit of slowing down for all bodily functions. So one of the other lessons you learn right away is that if you don't pretend like you are young, you're in bigger trouble than that. I play in a weekly game on Friday mornings in Ramat Beit Shemesh, a weekly pickup basketball game, where I am one of the younger people who play the game. There's a whole lot of stretching in ways that are barely even stretches. It just involves kind of extending an arm outwards and calling it a stretch. You hear actually creaks that are going up. Sounds are coming out of the body and out of the elbow that were never meant to come out of an elbow, and different types of grunts and other types of, and nothing's even happened yet. This is just while people are talking on the side and kind of tying their shoes. You're already hearing people really questioning what's going on. Things are called just to give a break and to a stop. Nobody even gets upset when there are too many fouls called all the time or when people stop the game. Any excuse to stop the game and just to take a breather is welcomed by everybody all the time. It's a very poor excuse for any sport I've ever heard of. It's almost an embarrassment to call it basketball some of the time. And it has to be counterbalanced a little bit. I wouldn't be able to sustain my connection. I wouldn't be able to keep up with a sport that I love. I wouldn't be able to call myself a ball player if I didn't once in a while play with my teenage children, if I didn't once in a while on a Friday afternoon play with a bunch of people who come from the different yeshivas. You have to be able to sustain a certain connection with that which is young and vital in the world if you want to remain young and vital in the world. I want to share with you something which, I don't know, somehow, some way it becomes lost in some of the work that we do and some of the efforts that we make, even though it really never should be. I see on the board one of the post-it notes, I guess, from the earlier session, being best part of being an advisor is. There are a lot of great suggestions that are up there. I really think, and I don't say this lightly, because there can't be a wrong answer to a personal question like that. There can't be only one best part of being an advisor and whatever it brings to a person. But I think there is, on what I saw on that board, and I reviewed all the answers quickly, and I don't know who I'm giving credit or a shout out to right now when I say it, but there's really one answer on there that withstands the test of time. There's really one answer on there that is actually more correct than the others. Only one of those pieces of paper describes the effect and the influence that the NCSYers have on us when we interact with them. Only one of them describes it's great to give to other people. I feel good about myself. That's a wonderful answer, and it's a true answer. I'm doing things that I think are fulfilling. I'm doing things that are consistent with what God wants me to be doing. There can't really be much of a better answer than that, except I believe that there is. I believe there is a better answer than that. Because somebody wrote on that board that other direction of how this relationship works, the best part of being an advisor is the inspiration we receive from the NCSYers. It's our ability to stay connected to a world outlook that is very, very elusive for us. That the older we get, and this is a process that starts from the minute we begin to think of ourselves as adults, and we're no longer in our teenage years, or at least in our early teenage years. We're not adolescents, we're not in high school anymore, and we begin to lose that perspective of possibility, of growth, and we begin to lose some of the inspiration that is built into the DNA of an NCSYer, of anybody when they're in high school, of anybody when they're in grade school. That sense of growth and that of inspiration that's unique to this relationship that's provided in that way. That is an incredible answer. I don't know, I've had the privilege now to have a relationship with Rav Lachman from Keren Biavne for almost 30 years, since I spent time in Keren Biavne and I was in his shir then. I think in all those conversations, I'm pretty sure I've never said the right thing to any question he's ever asked. And even when he doesn't ask questions and I say something, this is, I guess, part of what makes a great Rebbe. He's not shy about being critical and letting you know that I said the wrong thing or I said it in the wrong way. I had one awkward exchange that has stuck with me for a very long time. I think I've only had awkward exchanges with him. But one awkward exchange, and this one was really more on me than on anything else. So I taught right down the block in MTA after attending MTA, and I had the extremely unenviable experience of sharing a Rebbe's room with many of my teachers and many of my Rebbeim, and I couldn't get out of those rooms quick enough. I wanted no part of what they were speaking about and what they were doing and how they were eating their lunch and the rest of it. It didn't really excite me all that much. And then I had it again when I was Rav Lachman moonlights in Reshit a little bit, and I was teaching in Reshit, and Rav Lachman would sometimes, before he would go to give a shiurim on his once a week visits to Reshit, this was the first year that I was teaching in Reshit, and Rav Lachman was there also. And it was a little bit of an unfortunate and, I guess, semi-awkward silence between us in that room. And I was just trying to make small talk and conversation, you know, Rebbe to Rebbe, and just trying to speak with him a little bit. And I said to Rav Lachman, "So what are you teaching this month? Hey, let's talk shop a little bit, and let's talk chinuch, and let's talk education. What are you teaching?" And he, as always, again, it wouldn't have mattered what I said. He would have told me what was wrong about it. And I really believe that's part of what a great Rebbe is going to do. But Rav Lachman, he just put his arm on me and he said, "That's the difference. That's the biggest difference between me and you." He said, "I've been doing this since before you were born, and I've never taught anybody. I'm just learning with them. You're doing what you're doing, and you may be teaching, but if you are, you're missing so much of the experience. You're missing so much of what you're doing. Never again ask me what I'm teaching to my students in Keren Biavne. Never again ask me what I'm giving over. Ask me what I'm learning with them. Ask them what I'm doing, the level on which I'm meeting with them, the discussions that I'm having, the give and take that's going to take place in the relationship. Then you'll know what I do in my classroom. Then you'll know what I'm doing. That's the shop that we can talk. That's the relationship we can have. As long as you're going to ask me, what am I teaching? What am I just giving over to them? You are missing one of the most important and healthiest parts of the relationship and of the dynamic as it exists. Missing the mark in terms of what could be in the Rebbe Talmud and the teacher-student and the advisor NCSYer relationship, and what makes it so extraordinarily special. There's a very, very bizarre insertion of the younger generation in the parsha that we read just yesterday. Moshe Rabbeinu appropriately brings karbanos as part of the culmination of the entire Matan Torah experience. And when he brings those karbanos, he needs people to help him. And it's not just any people that he sends. The Torah tells us that Moshe Rabbeinu sends the Na'arei B'nei Yisrael, the children of B'nei Yisrael. He sends them to bring those karbanos. Rashi comments, quoting the Mechilta, Rashi comments that it doesn't actually mean the children, it means the Bechor. We know that the Avodah was done originally by the firstborns, not done by the Kohanim. That didn't happen until later, until Chet Ha'egel. So a Na'ar is associated with the Bechor. But the Ramban asks right away, that's not true. What is a Na'ar and a Bechor? What do those two words have to do with each other? Not every child is a firstborn. Most firstborns are not children. After a certain age, you're still a firstborn, you're not a child. In fact, specifically, the people who did the Avodah in the Beis HaMikdash were not the 8-year-old firstborns, they were the older firstborns. They weren't, it's just a mistake. What's the Medrash even talking about when it refers to these firstborns as a Na'ar specifically? And that's why the Ramban and many of the Mepharshim say no. Na'ar may or may not be also a reference to the Bechor and also a reference to the firstborn. Na'ar, though, is most importantly a reference to a Na'ar. Na'ar refers to the fact that Moshe Rabbeinu scanned the crowd and he identified and he said, "Let's bring the children up here. Let's get them involved." The Chizkuni identifies one critical aspect of the work that we do. The Chizkuni says, why did Moshe Rabbeinu do that? Because you can't deal with a community, you can't deal with communal problems without focusing on the youngest members, because they represent the future. They represent what's going to be tomorrow. They represent what's going to be dead. There's no 12-year-old, there's no 16-year-old that's a 16-year-old. A 16-year-old is a young mom or a young dad. A 16-year-old has so much in front of them. There's a forward-thinking element to the work that we do. The Chizkuni describes it. Moshe Rabbeinu says, if this is about us, then it's about now. But if it's about the children, if it's about the teenagers that we're dealing with, if we have a focus on them, then now we're thinking three steps down the line. Then we're thinking about what's going to be tomorrow. We're thinking about not how our community is going to look today, but we're thinking in a much, much more advanced way about how our community is going to look tomorrow. What is chus ashrenu matov chelkenu? There are no rooms that I know of on the planet that are as forward-thinking as the work that we are doing here this afternoon, and then, of course, the work we do on Shabbatons and on summer programs, actualizing the lessons that are here. Nobody sitting here today is thinking about today. No one sitting here today is trying to be only, also yet, but not only the best Jew, the best leader, the best person they can be right now. We're all thinking about the future. Because the people that we are interacting with, the people that we are teaching, the people that we are involved with in NCSY represent that future and represent that thinking to an incredible degree. And that's what the Chizkuni says. If you want optimism, if you want to look forward, then look to the younger generation. This is about them and what's going to be for them down the line. This is the comment of the Chizkuni. But the Ramban, when he answers his own question, goes one step further, and that's what we began with when we were speaking earlier. The Ramban says the reason why Moshe Rabbeinu singles out and approaches the children is because they needed the children to provide something that only they can. They needed the interaction with the teenagers to remind the jaded B'nai Yisrael, the Avadim of B'nai Yisrael, the most downtrodden and depressed, what hope looks like, what optimism looks like, what confidence looks like. No person who was a slave in Mitzrayim could look at the world with the kind of wholesome eyes that a child can. No person can hear Kriyas HaTorah or listen to an advisor for the first time the way any of our NCSYers can. We need to be reminded of that perspective very often. The avoda of Kabbalas HaTorah is served better. The best candidates, the biggest contributors to all of Klal Yisrael's efforts for Kabbalas HaTorah, the single biggest contributors to that were the younger generation. And Moshe Rabbeinu is learning from them as much as he is teaching them. And the Jewish people, the Zakenim in particular, the elders, are learning from. It wasn't just like bringing them along because they're tomorrow or because it's nice to be inclusive and involve them. It's because we need them, because that's the way in which we become inspired. We become, it's so circular in a wonderful, beautiful, symbiotic way. We become inspired from their inspiration. We can then give them more because of it. I have a debate that I love to quote all the time when I was involved with NCSY summer programs while teaching a little bit in one of the local high schools. So I had a debate with one of my colleagues, a good friend of mine all the time. He worked like crazy, and I tried to work hard myself. He worked like crazy, an incredibly hardworking person who put everything he had into his work during the year. And when that bell rang in June, he didn't run away and be like happy and glad to be on vacation, but he did exhale, and he did relax, and he did reintroduce himself to his family. And he used to say to me all the time, and it was very similar to the conversation I quoted before in the sense that initially it gave me pause. And initially it caused me a little bit of depression. Initially it made me quite jealous of him. He said, I don't know how you could possibly give yourself over to a job during the year and then by your own admission actually work harder during the months of the summer. How do you? It's not physically possible, but we're not here to give you an NCSY award. I'm not admiring you. I'm criticizing you, he said. It's not fair what you're doing. It's not appropriate what you're doing. I don't know how you walk into the school building after Labor Day exhausted from a summer of working, running through Israel, and doing all those things. It's not fair. you're not being professional. It's not an appropriate way for you to invest in your profession, invest in your craft, and to be a teacher. And it bothered me when he said it. He was a good friend. He had every right to be critical. He had every right to raise it for me. But I'm not being corny when I tell you I didn't need to read it in a book. I experienced the answer. I came back from one summer with NCSY summer. I came back from one particular summer, and I marched right up to him, and he said, I don't understand you at all. I don't understand how you can only interact with teens as they are during school so often, how you can spend a month of June and watching them cram for their test and, you know, cheat on this and run away from that. And again, not necessarily, I don't know if any of us would want to be judged on the way we are in June and, you know, in our junior year of high school. It's not exactly bringing out the best of us. It's not the most inspiring version of an 11th grader we're ever going to see in our lives. I said, I don't know how you walk into the room after Labor Day. Because I walk into the room after Labor Day, I may be fatigued. I may be physically exhausted, but I am so inspired and so confident in the future of the Jewish people based on my experiences. I know exactly why I'm teaching, what I'm teaching, and how I'm teaching it. I can't stop the flood of ideas that run into my head about how I might do it differently or how I might do it better. The stories I'm able to tell, the experiences I'm able to share, that fuels me through the entire year. It doesn't drain me, and it doesn't deny me. It fuels me, and I don't know how anybody walks in to teach without those experiences. I don't know how anybody is able to move forward without taking that message and taking that inspiration from the teenagers, from the NCSYers that we deal with. I've mentioned to some of you earlier, I'll just say it very quickly now, for those who have not heard it before. Rav Aryeh Leibowitz and his beautiful Sefer analyzing different parts of tefillah from a halachic perspective and giving some of the ideas behind them, says a beautiful, beautiful essay on the different halachic controversies that have emerged over the years regarding the recitation of Yigdal, Adon Olam, and Anam Zemiros. These are things that have all sorts of massive philosophical and theological implications. Yud Gimel Ikarim are involved in that. Should they be said, and how should they be said, and when should they be said, especially when it comes to Anam Zemiros. I grew up in a shul in Teaneck, New Jersey, where the minhag, which I believe was based on the practice of Rasal Zaychik, was not to recite Anam Zemiros except on Yom Kippur. And there's a certain irony in some of that, that here you have a tefillah which might be too holy to be said by the congregation in general, and yet the practices in so many of our shuls, especially in the Young Israel scene in North America, so many of our shuls, the practice is not only do we say it all the time, but it's said by young children. It's said by people below bar mitzvah. It's said by people who can't possibly fathom what it is they're saying or how it is that they're saying it. And that's what you have over there. It's said by those people in that way. It's a very, very strange type of irony that many people, including the poskim, they question and they wonder about. They almost poke fun at it. Hayitachein, is it possible that this is the way we treat Anam Zemiros? That this is the way we treat such an incredibly holy and lofty part of davening? And you can guess already, based on what we said here this afternoon, you can guess already the answer that Rabbi Leibowitz quoted from a particular sefer, that there's another time where the Holy of Holies is open. And another time that when the Holy of Holies is open, lo and behold, in the middle of all of that incredible and awe-inspiring Kedusha, we encounter children. We know that the Kruvim that we read about in this week's Parsha, the Kruvim that sat atop the Arun Kodesh, the Kruvim that were housed in the Kodesh HaKadoshim had the faces of small children. What we are doing in every young Israel, if that's your minhag, is simply imitating the Mishkan, the Beis HaMikdash, of what you find in the Holy of Holies. What you find in the places of the greatest depth, the greatest beauty, the greatest meaning, and the greatest inspiration. You will find our teenagers. You will find a person experiencing their first Shabbos in a Shabbat Tov. You will find a person with incredible pure curiosity, an incredibly beautiful lack of cynicism, which plagues us to such an extraordinary degree, a wholesomeness and a purity that is the ultimate companion for all of the Kedusha we seek in our lives. Of course, children are the ones who say Anam Zemiros, because only children can say Anam Zemiros. Of course, we find inspiration in the Shabbaton because that's the greatest place in our world where we will find inspiration, where we will find teenagers acting in their best versions of themselves, where we will find teenagers being everything we want for ourselves, where we will remind ourselves that we live in a world of change, of possibility, of hope, and of optimism. where they look to us to be the best versions of ourselves, where they're not living in this type of stagnant world where we are what we are and that's not really good enough even for ourselves, but they look to us to be the heroes that we want to be and that we know we are capable of being. And they look at a world with hopeful eyes. They look at a world with such incredible purity and such incredible optimism. Am I being naive? Am I describing some teenagers and NCSYers that you've never met on your Shabbaton, and that's not exactly the way they're acting when you're chasing them out of the stairwell? You're wrong and I'm right. No offense. That is exactly what I'm describing. They're allowed to be mischievous. They're allowed to be imperfect. None of that stains or sullies their right and access to the Kodesh HaKadoshim of the Jewish experience, to the ultimate belief and confidence that they all have and that we have in them, Rabba Emuna Secha. The Ribbono Shel Olam's confidence in us is unlimited in its greatness. Our confidence in our NCSYers is unlimited in its greatness. And the levels of inspiration that we derive from them is limitless in the same exact proportions in the same exact way. This is our Ashrenu. This is our good fortune and our privilege to be part of the things that we're doing. And this must be the focus and the methodology of our efforts. To learn with our NCSYers, to learn from our NCSYers, to focus on those opportunities and those gifts in the great way that we have, and to take advantage of what we have the opportunity to do and the ways in which we have the opportunity to grow ourselves alongside the NCSYers we're learning with. Thank you for listening.